About Last Night is a podcast series that I have wanted to record for ages. Each episode, I talk to someone who excels in their field about the highs and lows of their creative journey and how and where they find joy in their lives. Some people have asked me about the name, Why About Last Night? Simply because I meet my guests towards the end of the day and we chat over a drink or two. This episode's guest is Ali Mapletoft. Ali founded her brand, Age of Reason, after noticing a gap in the market for high-end designs that have a message and purpose. Age of Reason produces luxury fashion and home accessories. When I see Ali's creations, and you can check them out on Instagram, the words that spring to mind for me are unique, edgy, cool, whilst being absolutely stunning. Her work has been featured in a variety of locations from Liberty in London and Harvey Nichols to the Tate Modern. Press highlights have included Vogue Gift Guide, Stylist Magazine, Red Magazine and Telegraph Homes. Ali strongly believes that beautiful, luxurious pieces can be made in a sustainable, empowering way. And she chose the name Age of Reason to reflect her empowerment ethos. No sweatshops, no minimum wage labour, just beautiful things made by women whose craft is rewarded with fair pay. You're probably getting a sense of Ali already and how her principles are front and centre of her brand and her moral compass guides every step of her creative and business journey. So, I drove down to Brighton where Ali is based. We met on a glorious summer's day in the restaurant at the artist's residence where there was a lovely, lovely chilled vibe. We talked about how Ali got into the fashion industry, where her journey has taken her so far, and of course, how her principles are the cornerstone of her business. Here's our conversation. Okay, so I am really, really delighted to be sitting here with Ali Mapletoft, who's an incredible designer. I've actually had a wonderful day today because I've driven down in the afternoon and it's sunny blue skies and I'm in Brighton, which is unusual for me. Ali, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's so kind of you to make time because I am really, really excited. So I want to jump in. Age of Reasons, your brand, is not a run-of-the-mill brand. It's quite unusual. So I want you to tell me a little bit about how it was born and how you got into fashion.
Okay, well, it's always been my perspective that ethical fashion and accessories and homeware can be fun.
Okay.
And can be playful. It doesn't all have to be about doom and gloom and misery. It's something that's meant to bring people joy.
Yes.
It's something that's meant to bring out the playful side in people.
Yes.
And I've always had the intention that it's something a bit different. So it's something for people who've really come of age in their own personal style or the styling of their home and they're really happy to express themselves.
Thank you.
Through fashion and accessories.
Yes. Well, I think that's a wonderful thing because you're absolutely right. Fashion is all about our own style and our self-expression, and that's why we all pick what we pick. You're wearing a beautiful t-shirt right now, which is obviously one of your
Thank
designs,
you.
Isn't it?
Yeah, this is a silk tunic. It's with beautiful. Yeah,
so
ship on it.
T-shirt really didn't do it justice at all. It is absolutely glorious, and it just drapes beautifully, and it's got ships on it.
Yeah, it's got ships and boats and birds and a seascape on it.
So is that old or new?
This is probably a couple of years old. I think this is probably 2016,
stunning.
Spring, summer 2016.
Stunning.
Yeah.
So let's just step back a little bit. How did you get into fashion? Was it like a light bulb moment when you were little? Or?
No, not at all. In fact, when I just left uni and I was sort of struggling to know what to do with my life when I graduated from an animation and filmmaking course.
Oh, wow.
I actually did an internship for a friend of mine who's a set designer for Vivian Westwood. And it was really exciting because we painted a set for her. So we did the set for the Ultra Femininity show. I think it was spring, summer 2004, 2005.
That's an amazing gig to get.
Yeah, and we travelled to the Louvre in Paris.
Oh,
and
wow.
it was really exciting and really fun. It was also terrifying because I had no idea what I was doing.
Yes.
The entire team were, smoking pot or drunk whilst painting the set.
Isn't that part of being a creative?
Yeah, it was unpaid, and the crescendo was Vivian yelling at me, the intern, at the after party of the show because she didn't like the set.
Oh my god!
So I came away from that thinking, I hate fashion, hate fashion people.
I was going to ask you, did you meet her? But I didn't realise it would be like
she,
that.
Oh yeah, she yelled at me because I was there and nobody else was there to yell at. So I remember coming away from it and just saying, you know, to my best friend at the time, I am never going to get involved with fashion people because they're all completely mad. Oh, and it was nearly 10 years later, I think it was just after my daughter was born, who's now, you know, nearly 9.
Wow.
That my husband said to me, why don't you go into fashion? And I was just like, you're mad. That is not the world for me at all.
Yeah.
And I remember we were crossing Holborn Bridge and I was having one of those, I'm nearly 30, I'm having a meltdown, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life moments.
Yeah.
And he said, you should go into fashion, and I was just like, shut up, that's never going to happen. And then funnily enough, I started to get up really early and draw when my daughter was a baby because she used to wake me up at 5 and I just couldn't go back to sleep, and I just get up and draw and draw and draw, and I started designing scarves. And that year I was asked to design a range of scarves for Whistles, and I was also
invited.
That's
an amazing gig as well. How did that happen?
It was amazing. I don't know. I really don't. It was just kind of luck. And then
maybe one of those signs that it was meant to be.
Yeah. So I designed some scarves for Whistles. I got picked as a runner-up for a Grazia competition called Fash Factor, where people like Henry Holland and Susie Bubble came in to kind of terrify the life out of us and look very critically at our work. And I got picked as a runner-up for that, and that led to, bizarrely, me being invited to 10 Downing Street on a walk with Sam Cam to represent new British designers. And you know, hang out with people from Save the Children. It was such a strange year, you know. So in that year, I went from thinking I hate fashion and I'm not going to do anything to do with fashion
to being totally immersed.
To being immersed in it,
yes,
in a really surreal and weird way. And I still sort of have flashbacks of like walking through Horse Guards Parade after, you know, being at 10 Downing Street, thinking, why am I here? This is really weird.
I tell you what I love about that, and that bit of your story so far, is, as you said at the beginning, you know, ethical fashion is really important to you. You weren't really sure about the industry as a whole. But it's almost like those strands of meaning were kind of presented to you?
Absolutely. And at that time, I was very naive and didn't know very much about the fashion world at all. And that was before Rana Plaza, the terrible tragedy in Bangladesh where the factory collapsed. And I think had I been invited to 10 Downing Street post that or now, I would be the person walking up to Sam Cam and saying, you know, what are you going to do about that?
Yes, of course.
Because as a designer, as a feminist, as a person who has an interest in ethics, I've found my voice much more recently.
Yes.
At the time, I was a rabbit in headlights and didn't know what to say. And I think that incident, that Rana Plaza incident, really did change a lot for me.
Yes.
Because
many people, I think.
Yeah, and Fashion Revolution came about because of that. And I spent a year after that not buying any item of clothes at all unless I could meet the person who'd made it, which was really illuminating.
Wow.
And so the Rana Plaza thing really was the seed that was planted for me to do with fashion.
Yes.
Because I was already doing scarves, but I didn't really consider those to be fashion.
And I'm so pleased also that you said, because I was waiting for you to say that the start of it was drawing, because we met last year, did we? I think for the first time. And you know, you've got your beautiful area where you work and you've got that beautiful drawing board, and I've seen you post pictures. I'm sure everyone else has seen pictures of you on Instagram, and it's just such a lovely space, and everything that you do is very design and visually led. So
yeah, so that's where I kind of find my freedom. So for me, it has to be about people, and it has to be about purpose. And then the freedom is in the drawing itself. So a lot of people say, you know, they start their day with some sort of meditative practice or some spiritual thing that they do. But for me, that's drawing. So that's lucky because it's part of the work anyway. And if any time that I feel disconnected or I feel like I need to tether myself or ground myself back to what I love and what's important to me, it really is as simple as going to the drawing table.
Yes.
And what I've tried to do with that is to produce work that has some kind of message within it. So the early scarves I did, I had ones that said things like be bold, be curious, you know. There were little messages and little hidden bits of wording in there.
Do you think that's just the sort of person you are? Do you think that sort of, you know, some people, I mean, I am going to make a dreadful admission now, but I think it's only been in the last few years that I've really questioned things I buy and looking at, you know, clean supply chains and sustainability and just thinking, you know, I've got 20 plus years of beautiful clothes. I never need to buy another piece of clothing again. And I think I'm being much more discerning. And I'm ashamed to say that I feel like I'm quite late to, I was going to say the party, but it's such an important thing, I don't want to trivialise it by saying party. Do you think that this is something that was just inbuilt in your character and your personality, that you've always searched for?
I think the provenance of things is really important to me, but you know, we're all late to the party because we didn't know how important this
stuff was.
I grew up in Lesotho, which is a tiny country in southern Africa. And my parents were artists. They had a pottery there. I don't think we've ever talked about this before.
No,
but
I was
surrounded by craftspeople. So I was surrounded by, you know, women who made baskets, people who made pottery, people who made clay sculpture.
Yes.
People who, you know, could whip you up a rug or a basket out of grass and it would be the most beautiful thing you've seen. People
yes.
who make tapestries. You know, that's what I grew up around. You know, largely women.
Yes.
Doing these craft-based things.
So it was in your DNA.
Yeah.
It really was.
That's what I grew up seeing. So
yes.
My parents are potters, so I saw how things are made from being a lump of clay in your hands to being a beautiful vase that's, you know, on the mantelpiece with flowers in it. So
yes.
I've always understood that things have a
provenance. Process.
And there's a process.
Yes.
And real people work on those things. And I think that's something maybe that we've lost a little bit. And you're saying, you know, you've only recently started to look at the ethics and the supply chain behind your clothing. But that's true of everything. You know, like 20 years ago, it was really eccentric to ask if your lettuce was organic. Now it's
yes,
normal.
Absolutely.
It's completely normal. And
yeah,
we should
yeah.
be thinking about that with fashion as well. It should become normalised.
Yes.
And I don't think it's strange anymore to walk into a shop and say, where's that made? Or do you know who made that? Or what materials is that made of? In fact, it's great to ask those questions because that boutique owner who doesn't know this week, if
it'll
three people
trigger,
ask them,
yes.
by next week they might take it seriously and they might go, well, I need to know this.
Yes.
And then they'll start talking to the brands and the brands will have to start telling them where they've got things made. And often there is information, it's just that people don't know it's important
to
know it.
Absolutely.
I used to do this cheeky thing where I used to be sort of like secret shopper in
the shops that sell
my stuff. So I would go in, and when my stuff was stocked in Jaeger Boutique Gallery in Regent Street, I'd go in.
Yes.
And I would say, so tell me about this. And they would actually do really, really well.
Brilliant.
You know,
yes.
And I think it's really important to take responsibility for that.
Yes.
You know, generally, when you have a brand, when you create anything, it's your responsibility, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
100%.
Absolutely.
So everything from my packaging to my products to the quality to the materials to the supply chain to the labour to the rates of pay to the conditions, that's my responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have to do everything in my power.
Yes.
To satisfy my own, you know, moral compass, I suppose you could call it that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But also, I find it interesting and I find it fun. You know, it's more interesting to me to know, you know, that Tilda did the hand rolling on
yes.
these scarves than to not know. Why
yes.
would I not want to know that?
Yeah, of course. And I think when it's your thing, and certainly as a creative, I think we have almost an obsession, a compulsion, a need to just know about all the areas. So you're right. Actually, anybody that doesn't, that's kind of the wrong way around.
Mm.
When you started the scarves, so that was like your first foray, let's say,
yeah.
into producing a product, and you did it for Whistles, you said. Is that when Age of Reasons was born?
Well, Age of Reason was actually born when Sam Roddick, who ran Coco de Mer,
yes.
Anita Roddick's daughter,
yes.
Who's a friend of a friend, said to me, I had a conversation with her, I can't remember if it was on text or face-to-face, where I said, you know, I've got this idea, I want to do this thing, what do you think? And she just went, stop talking about it, do it. And I was like, great. And I said, you know, if I make scarves, will you stock them in your shop?
Yeah.
And she went, yeah, why not? So I made really naughty ones. The first ones I made had little Russian dolls with nipple tassels and kind of like bondage ropes and
fantastic.
Gags and like chains between the nipples and stuff. They were really cheeky and they had handcuffs on them and they were naughty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I went on to do one that was called the Orgy Scarf, and you can imagine what that was.
Yes,
like.
I can.
They were quite cheeky and quite naughty. And they stocked them in Coco de Mer for a couple of years, and they stocked cushions in there as well.
Oh, yes.
So that was really fun. And then, obviously, you know, that's a very specific market. So, you know, you only buy an orgy scarf made out of pure silk from Coco de Mer. Yeah, exactly. So I diversified and created some fashion scarves and went out to see boutiques here in Brighton and in London.
Yes.
And it just grew.
And I think I know, but why Age of Reason?
Okay, so for me, I love the sound of it. I love the way those words resonate.
Yes.
And I had written down loads and loads and loads of different words that I like the sound of. But for me, it's about a new era. So it's about... it's about the dawning of a new era. It's about leaving behind the old ways of mass production.
Yes.
It's about the end of slavery, because the Age of Enlightenment, the Age of Reason, was to do with you know, the end of slavery and emancipation and freedom and freeing people. And that's something I very much believe in. And I'm particularly into that from the perspective of female empowerment. Because I find that if a brand is selling you a T-shirt that says, you know, girl power or... you know, women power or something like that, and it's made by, you know, women in Bangladesh who can't afford to feed their
no
own
point,
children.
Yes, there's no point just putting the words
that,
out there.
Yeah, that's not good enough.
I agree.
Our messages and our actions need to match up.
Yes.
And that's not because I'm trying to be a misery guest. It's just like, why wouldn't we want to do that, you know?
No, absolutely. And I think one of the first times you and I met, I think what really connected me to you was I had a sense that we both, in our own ways, and you're doing it in an incredible way, really strongly feel that your talk and your walk have to match up.
Absolutely, yes. So if you've got a T-shirt that's got an empowering feminist message on it, that energy, if you could call it that, should be carrying through right from source, all the way to the person. So, like, for me, if you're creating an empowering design, it should empower everyone, from the person who makes it to the person who wears it. And also, you know, if you have the opportunity to give back, so we give to Womankind Worldwide when we make T-shirts. We've done underwear and given to the Eve Appeal. When you give back like that, it's like you're continuing that good story, that good energy, and sending that out into the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we know who made those things. We know that they're well paid. We know that, you know, even if we're sourcing a cotton T-shirt, it has to be fair wear. Minimum, it has to be fair wear.
Because
you only have to spend a couple of quid extra to get a fair wear T-shirt.
Yes. And so why
wouldn't
you?
Beautiful T-shirt, really nicely made. And we know that the women who made that T-shirt have got great facilities. They've got nursery facilities for their kids. You know, all of that good stuff.
Yes.
And that, to me, is more joyful. And I honestly think that when you wear a garment, like for me, it's like you're wearing all the energy that's gone back.
No, I couldn't
right
agree more.
Right through its story.
Yeah. I couldn't agree. That's a beautiful way of putting it as well. I think also that's interesting, isn't it? Because I think if you create something with so many positive messages and really strong values, then people really don't mind paying a little bit. I mean, you know, because you create luxury scarves. I mean, your scarves are stunning. You know, that sort of product is not cheap, but it doesn't matter, I suppose, to your consumers.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, the person who wants to buy that, when I first started doing this, I had this kind of idea in my head that that was a very affluent person that had the money to spend on that and they were willing to spend it and that they would have a certain type of life. What has really surprised me by meeting my customers face to face and going out and seeing them at fairs and you know, meeting them at events is that it's not that they are an affluent type of person of a level, it's just that they are a type of person who values that particular thing.
Yes.
So, you know, I've sold to people who are teachers, nurses, people who I wouldn't have put in that bracket, because it's not actually about how much they earn, it's about how much they value that thing and how much they're willing to save up for it or sacrifice other things to get it.
And
people get it, they get it.
Yeah, totally. And I think also it goes back to your point at the beginning about style and fashion being a way of expressing yourself. Because we all make snap decisions about people when we see what they're wearing. So if you're wearing something meaningful that's been designed by you, you know, that must really, they must identify with that, with your message, which must bring you such happiness and joy.
I love that. Yeah, I love it. I love it when somebody has something of mine, whether it's a t-shirt or a scarf or a cushion or whatever it is, and they're just loving it so much that they send me a picture on Instagram when they unwrap it. They send me an email telling me all about it.
And the interiors you put on are incredible. I mean, it's your customers are damn stylish.
Yeah, our customers have got really, really cool homes. And it's so satisfying to see that. I'm always stalking those hashtags, you know, like style it happy and style it dark and stuff like that, because I see my stuff popping up.
That's
in
amazing.
There, and it gives me such a buzz. I love it.
Well, I was going to ask you how Age of Reasons and fashion bring you joy, but you've just kind of encapsulated it beautifully. So I'm going to move on from that. Tell me why, because I'm curious. Why scarves and interiors? Because it's kind of like a... I don't know, it kind of does go together because it's kind of accessories, but the homeware aspect seems a little bit tangential to me.
Yeah, okay, so it sort of happened accidentally, really. When I started out doing the scarves, we would do pocket squares as well. And the men's pocket square is 45 centimetres square. It just happens to be exactly the same size as a standard cushion. And so we would have extra pocket squares, and we just started making them into cushions just as an experiment.
Yes.
And people really loved them. So then it evolved into making the shaped ones as well.
Yes.
And it was just a natural evolution. It was just a thing that happened. So responding to the way that customers use things. For example, we had customers who would buy the pocket square and sew it onto the front of a cushion.
How funny.
Or buy it and frame it as a picture.
Yes.
And we were like, well, if they're doing this, I mean, they'd buy scarves as well, full, massive 140 by 140 scarves, and have them put in frames.
Yes.
So we were like, well, the customers are sort of telling us
what they want.
What they want. They're doing this with the product because it's decorative. And I guess the link is that decorative aspect, messaging, so slogans and things like that tend to work on scarves and on cushions.
Absolutely. Why the eyes as well?
I just love drawing eyes.
There's Do you?
Yeah, I just love it. I just love drawing lips and eyes. I could draw them all day long.
Could you?
I am obsessed. I could do it all day. That's why I'm doing the lips book.
Yes,
as well.
So now tell us about the lips book. Because that's like your new project. And you look lit up, everybody. I'm afraid you can't see her. But she's like, your eyes went, wow.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, so tell me about the lips book.
So I am collecting lips and quotes, words of wisdom from women all over the world. I'm collecting a little lip selfie, and then I'm going to be hand-drawing the lips.
I'm going to send you my lips.
Please do.
Yeah, I'm going to get over the stress of this much of me, and I'm going to send you my lips, yes.
I can't wait, because I want as many people in there as possible, as many as I can physically draw.
Yes.
And the idea is to make a beautiful coffee table book with the illustrated women's lips, and then on the facing page, I'm going to hand-write their words of wisdom.
Okay, wonderful.
And I've had some amazing things, you know, the words of wisdom that women live by, little quotes that they've got handed down from their mothers or grandmothers.
Yes.
I've had you know, Nigerian ladies sending me their proverbs because they're really into their proverbs.
Yes.
They have a proverb for everything.
Yes.
And you know, it's just great. And just these little snippets of wisdom and self and, you know, self-love and affirmations that are coming through are just really touching.
And also it is empowering in a different way. What I think is really wonderful is when women raise each other up.
Absolutely.
And they hold hands and they stand together, and there's that wonderful sisterhood vibe.
And I think maybe it's also just a sea change in what it means to be women, what it means to be female, and also what we're up against.
Yes.
Because, you know, like to me, people have said to me, you know, are you a feminist? I've said yes, and people have said, well, what does that mean? I'm not comfortable with the term feminism.
Yes.
And I just think when you look at what we're up against now as women, you know, politically, things that are going on in America, stuff like that,
yes.
I don't care what you call it. We need a collective movement where we're using our positivity and our powers for the greater good.
Yes,
call
absolutely.
Call it what you like.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
mind what you call it.
And isn't that a shame that one word, the labelling becomes so important, and then there are negative connotations sometimes because people, as you say, go, oh, and I'm not sure about feminists or whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I think almost that definition of it is a bit outdated.
Like, I agree.
For me,
I agree.
It just means that we are equal.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know anyone who actively argues against that personally.
No, I agree.
You know, that we expect to enjoy the same treatment and privileges.
Yeah.
That we expect to be respected, that we expect to be paid.
Yes.
You know, these are all positive things as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with any of
that. There's nothing contentious about any of that. No, I totally
agree.
It's
not radical to me, you know.
No, and I also think, do you not feel as a mother, I find that these things are even more prevalent to me because we've grown up in a certain age and life is always changing and evolving, and you want to educate and empower your daughter and everybody's daughters so they can kind of take the ball and run with it.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, it's a lovely idea to think that by the time they're my age, they won't need to do that.
No.
Because we'll have done it, I hope.
Yes.
I don't know if that's realistic, but, you know, it seems to me that they are growing up to already understand their worth in a really, really brilliant way, and I'd love to see that continue.
And that must bring you joy.
It totally does. You know, I saw my daughter the other day looking in the mirror, and she was looking at her tummy, and I thought, oh, what's going on here?
Uh-uh.
And
yes.
She's nine. I thought, my first reaction was, uh-oh, what's going on? And I kind of looked around the bathroom door, and I said, so what are you doing? She said, I'm looking at my body. I said, oh, what are you thinking? And she said, I'm thinking, thank you, body, for everything that you do.
Wow.
And I was like, how cool is that?
That is so insightful and bright.
There was me thinking she was looking at her tummy because she didn't like it. Why would I have that idea?
Yeah, yeah.
She was looking at it thinking, yeah, great.
Rock on, body.
Yeah, rock on.
You're doing loads of good things for me. That's amazing. And, well, I think, I don't mean to be indulgent, but I think that's a real testament to how you're bringing her up, because I think there are so many body image issues these days. So how wonderful that from such an early age your daughter has a very healthy, positive mindset.
Well, it was just really cool as well because she was practicing gratitude. You know, I'm like, as somebody who's got to nearly 40 and had to learn how to practice gratitude,
yes.
It was really nice to see her just doing it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know,
that's wonderful. I love that. I love that story so much. So we've mentioned your family a couple of times, your kids. Juggling family and work is not always easy, especially as a creative where we don't live 9-to-5 lives, really. When life gets hard and you just deal with, say, the day-to-day run-of-the-mill challenges or something major happens, how do you manage and balance that, and how do you find joy when things are not maybe going as swimmingly as you'd like them to?
Well, I think I'm actually a great believer in the tantrum. I think sometimes you need to have your tantrum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, just so that everyone else around you understands what the problem is.
Yes.
So if I'm really run down, if it's all become too much for me and I'm overwhelmed, I let my partner know about it. He knows what's going on because I'm quite vocal and quite forward about how I'm feeling. So I don't think I ever internalise it that much and let it
I'm the same, actually.
I just let it all out. Yeah. I'm like, I'm having my tantrum now. It's all too much. And in a way, I just purge it in that way. I think it's healthier.
And then it goes.
And then it goes, and I'm
done. I totally agree.
And I just let it out. And then usually what helps me is having a couple of days off and then doing some drawing. And my husband always says to me, like, if you're bubbling away like a volcano like that,
yes,
and really frustrated, it just means you need to draw.
Yes,
just go draw.
Yeah, but that's great.
Just like, for goodness sake, just go draw.
But it's that thread that's at your core, because I have the same thing. So I'm so excited about the podcast series and I'm trying to do more writing and stuff like that, but if I don't sing every day, or I go a couple of days, say I have an early start or whatever, and I don't get to the piano, in my body, I feel different.
Yeah.
It's almost like I feel a bit like a caged animal, or I'm a little bit suffocated. So even if it's I do 15 minutes of exercises and just, you know, working on my range or something, just something, working my vocal cords, then makes me feel everything's well with the world.
It's exactly the same, yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it? And I think most creative people have that thread that's like, you know, so fine, but really, really important. you know, that just runs through everything and makes, balances everything else out.
Yeah, and I think you need to just create. It doesn't matter sometimes what the outcome is.
Yes.
And I think that's something that isn't always appreciated. You know, people hear one good song or see one good design and they think you just came up with it straight away. And it's really not like that for me. And
no.
I know, you know, from having spoken to friends of mine who do what you do, who are musicians.
Yes.
One of my best friends in the world is Emiliana Torini, the Icelandic singer. And she said to me that she produces, what did you say, something like, I do, you know, 20 crap songs for every good one that I do, just nobody hears them. You know, because she's like me, she sort of goes through the process and produces loads of stuff and then just goes, yuck, that's awful, and then suddenly something great comes.
Yes.
And I think that's really important to just keep going.
I agree.
Be prolific. Don't worry about making the perfect song or the perfect design every single time. Just do. Just make. Just create.
And as you said, there's joy in that creative process.
Yeah.
Just by doing the... Yeah. I want to say doing the work, but it never feels like work to me. Because, you know, when you love something, it doesn't feel like that. But no, I totally agree.
There are such funny moments that... the universe throws at you. So sometimes you sort of go, for example, I had this scarf that was a collaboration with a really good friend from university. We did a scarf called Feminists of the World Unite. And you'll think to yourself, oh, you know, that scarf's had its day. I'm gonna stop making that scarf. And, you know, 5 minutes later, you'll get an email from the British Museum saying, we want that scarf in our shop or something like that. You know, those little things happen.
Yes.
And I was just like, how did that happen? You know, and there are so many. And for me, it's usually, like we said, when the customers are really happy with that piece and they, you know, they're really overjoyed with it.
I can tell you exactly why it happens. The energy around everything you do is so authentic and so positive, and you're not, there's nothing contrived about you or your business or your creations. It's not even my journey and it's filling me with joy. It's just,
you know, it's important to have that because you don't have to be like anyone else. And
you
I
don't.
Think that that's something that it's easy to forget because there's so much repetition in our world and we're so bombarded with information and data all the time.
Completely,
and we sort of want the, you know, it's almost that effect where you want the likes and you want the recognition and you want the verification. But there's nothing that says, nothing written in law that says you have to do things the same way as anyone else. I had a really powerful experience over 6 months, which started last year, where I had a coach.
Okay.
And I worked with her to sort of access that power, that power of choice and that power of responsibility.
That sounds amazing.
Her name's Ebony Allard.
Actually, I think you mentioned her to me. Yeah, I will check her out.
She's a really interesting person as well as being a very good coach. But what she taught me is that, you know, there is always, 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 always a choice.
Yes.
In how you do things, in how you react to things, in how you create things. There's always a choice in everything.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, in a way, enables you to make your own joy.
Yes, yes.
All the time if you want to.
And it sounds like that was quite a pivotal process for you.
Definitely, because when I was very young, I told you I lived in Lesotho in Southern Africa, and I came to the UK on my own at the age of 16.
Gosh.
And my parents were not able to follow me because they were trapped there in a civil war, basically.
Right,
so I'd
be
on the phone to my dad and I'd hear helicopters and mortar bombs in the background. It was very dramatic.
Did you come just on your own?
I came to study, and I lived with my grandmother, but my grandfather at the time got dementia and she was full on looking after him.
Yes.
So I had like a very difficult time in my teenage years, and then suffered from eating disorders and had like quite a rough time.
Yes.
It took me until I was about 27 to really feel like I was out the other side of
that.
And that leaves you with lots of shadows and things you have to get over. So if you can sort of learn to parent yourself in the way that I did in that time when I was quite young and vulnerable, it sort of shows you that you have the resilience to kind of learn to access your own joy. The mind is incredibly powerful, and that would have been something that, you know, 20 years ago I would have brushed that idea aside and just not had time for it at all. And now I'm a real advocate, but, you know, with my children as well, for you make your own happiness.
Yes, no, I couldn't agree more, and you're absolutely right. I can think of a couple of instances in my life where I've had very, very dark periods of my life where it's not just a moment in time, it just feels like it's stretching out endlessly.
Yes.
And I maybe did have, and I allowed myself those moments of feeling on the floor, not wanting to get up. And then there is something in me, there's this little voice in my head that will always say, just roll your sleeves up and get on with it.
Yeah.
Because there's no other choice.
Yeah.
It's like there's something in me that'll say, you just have to find it. And you become stronger from the inside, and that's always the best way. And that makes you feel great about yourself. Takes time sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, motherhood and things like that, they're another sort of stepping stone in that journey in life. You know, that tests you in new ways that I couldn't have possibly imagined.
I could not agree more. Ali, I could literally sit here with you forever because you are so interesting and so vibrant and so passionate about what you do. And I think that's why I love you and I love your brand. But I think we're going to sadly have to wrap up. So can you, before we go, define joy for you in 3 words?
For me, I think it would have to be freedom, adventure, and creation.
That is wonderful. Ali, thank you so much.
It's been an
absolute pleasure.
Thank you.